Well, I see your manners haven't changed much in 5 years.
Do you want me to go out and wait till you tell me to come in?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Dun, 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 dun. This is season 4.
This is Batman.
Episode 17. The Brook Stops Here. Bum, 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 bum. And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
There's no reason for this, but it's happening anyway.
Folks, this is the first of 4 recordings we're doing today, so buckle up. Speaking of cheap laughs, again with this episode 69.
Nice.
Drops October 22nd. Let's read the Beverly Hills 90210 novel, Fantasies. For real this time, we promise. We did it. We broke it down.
We did.
It's been a while, but I think we have something for this.
Sadly, it does apply.
No.
Well, depending on how crazy it gets, we have, didn't we have something for that? Damn it. Didn't we have sexy, weird music?
Yes. It was the do-lo-lo-lo-lo-lo with Steve,
Dang.
I think.
I don't know where it is now.
Anyway, we're Squeeves. You should check it out. Patreon.com/againwiththis. We have a good time with this and all kinds of other things that aren't so nice. So
check it out.
There it is.
There it is.
It's labeled under creepy.
Yeah. Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into this episode, starting with our C plot.
Wait,
Jake.
New plot. Bum, 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 bum.
I mean, that does actually, that would work with the C plot, which is Jake gets a violent new side gig. Monty the Loan Shark.
Oh, no.
The show remembered about this. Mm-hmm. Shows up at Shooters. He got the money that Jake sent him, but it was a little short. And Jake tries to argue that it wasn't, but like, it's not. Like, there's going to be an audit. Like, I don't know what you think it serves you to argue.
I know. Like, wait till Venmo's invented.
Yeah.
This is, yeah.
The amount is what he tells you. That's how loan sharking works. Like, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Monty doesn't want more money, just a favor, which is to pick up $235 from a guy who owes him. Now, this hardly seems like it's worth sending a hired goon to collect.
Mm-mm.
More of a lone barracuda, really.
Yeah. Jake protests, to which Monty says if he and Jake aren't friends, Monty might have to remodel Shooters when a new owner takes over. And Jake's like, but I just owe. Because, you know.
Yeah.
Jake finally figures out he can't fight it. So he goes to this modest little coffee shop that was obviously last decorated in 1965. That is a compliment. You can see this joint in the visual aids.
Yep. Very gushy. Love it.
Mm-hmm. The owner comes out to say they're not open yet, which is weird because it looks like a place that does not close. But Jake awkwardly has to tell him why he's there. And the guy decides the play is to get physical with Jake, even though he's well into his 40s, possibly older. And Jake is Jake. I mean, he's short, but he's feisty. And Jake, keeping his voice low, insists that he doesn't want any trouble. But when the guy doesn't back down, Jake pushes him down in a booth, which is when the guy's wife comes out and he's like, no, go away. And then refuses Jake's help to get back up and then gives up, saying the money's in the till and he can't stop Jake anyway. But Jake can't do it. And he leaves empty-handed because Jake's still got a conscience, even though he's in for this ref stuff. And some number of days later, Monty comes by Shooters. Bobby, we will get to him the A-plot, but he is at the bar in this scene waiting for Amanda. He sees Jake open the till and give Monty the money. But Monty already talked to the guy, and he knows Jake didn't get it off him. And Jake thought that was his business, and Monty's like, no, it's not. And if Jake thinks he can incur his own debt and the coffee shop guys, he had better come up with a new business plan. And Jake's like, okay, but for now, I'm out of your operation. And Monty's like, still no. 2 weeks' interest is due tomorrow. Bobby hears this all, so put a pin in that because it's going to come up in the next episode. But that's it for the C plot. Anything to add?
Bum, 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 bum.
I mean, yeah, kind of. Like, Jake, business.
Yeah.
Why? I understand that they have to find something for him to do while they figure out who he's going to fuck next. But Can we not with this? Like, can't he just have some other problem?
Yeah.
Like Vanessa Marsil running a strip joint in the back that he doesn't know about. Like, this is just so
boring. Maybe he Stringer Bells it and goes to night school to learn about, you know, responsible fiscal.
Mm-hmm.
That would be interesting. Rules of order.
Sure.
Yeah. I also love that, like, both the shows had to have loan shark plot lines as though to educate the viewer of, like, how they do and don't work. Like, you can't say you're not going to work it off and trade. You can't pay your loan shark with a check, David.
Oh, your my loan God. Shark is not an actual shark.
Mm.
Yeah.
You don't have to be afraid.
Even
you
loan
have to be
narwhals
afraid.
Could be very be dangerous.
You have to be afraid of them, but not for that reason.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if you're not careful, they might sing to you.
Wow, when cued, does not take
sure
cue.
That was, I thought maybe I was missing a key reference. Dun, 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 bum, 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 bum.
All right, moving on from this song.
You were, but it works both ways.
Moving on to the B plot. The end of Jane's scheme reminds us she's not a schemer, and Kimberly tries to spoil things for Matt and Alan. So this is the episode where I noticed they inserted a shot of Jane with her pixie cut into the credits in case people got to the episode and were like, wait, where's the other long-haired blonde? Anyway.
Yeah.
After the credits, we rejoin Jane on the deck of the beach house visiting with Allison when Sydney comes out with lemonade. Clip two.
We're out of coffee, so don't ask. Do you want anything else?
No, thanks, Sid. Not for me.
I'd like a new life.
Who wouldn't?
I mean.
Seriously?
Yeah. No notes.
Right.
Sydney's John Waters rig is cute.
This one
scene.
Is, yes.
Yeah.
I had a dress like this at this time, except it was black with mm-hmm. like sort of beigey floral flocking, but same idea. Mm-hmm. So when Sydney's gone back inside, Jane bitches that being cared for by Michael and Sydney is poetic justice for everything she's done this season, basically. And then Joe enters the house in a totally bizarre outfit of ski sweater and full-length skirt. Ugh, the full-length skirt years. Why?
Yeah.
Just in time to hear this, clip three.
When I think about Richard and Joe spiking my drink, and now they're just gloating.
We're not gloating. Look me in the eye, Jane. Do you really think I could have done this to you?
Really, Jane, I can't imagine Joe drugging your wine any more than I can see myself doing it. Yeah. I guess I don't believe that you had a hand in this.
Thank you.
But I wouldn't put anything past Richard.
Richard's the man I'm with now, Jane.
You know, and I accept that. But I'm warning you, Joe, watch out for him.
He wouldn't have done anything like this, not for business or love.
He used us both, Joe.
Aren't you being a little harsh?
Well, my paralysis has given me a clarity of perception. So here's a free insight. The next designer, he's gonna sleep with her and dump you.
Maybe, but that is still not on the same level with attempted murder. Who hates you enough to want to see you dead?
Sydney going crazy with a fly swatter on the counter.
Ants. I despise ants.
Then she sees they're all watching her, and she does this little, oh, hey, wave, which is mm-hmm. in the visual aids,
with an
of
oven
course.
Mitt.
Yes.
Look, I feel like the despising of ants is relatable and
yes.
not probative.
Yes.
Second of all, Allison, don't help.
Maybe that's
but that
true.
Was pretty funny. Yeah. Yeah. She's like, well, all right, stipulated, but like, mm-hmm. But this is the issue that I'm having with any Richard plotline, like between the fact that there's a lot of stuff involving his machinations that we don't see.
Yeah.
And we're not shown him, like someone leaves a room and he's scheming. Like we kind of only get what they get.
Yeah.
Which is like not all that soapy. But then Patrick Muldoon's acting choices, let's say, since
sure.
we're feeling charitable. Mm-hmm. Don't give us anything either. So I'm not sure what we're supposed to think Richard's deal really is or how evil he actually is, but
right.
he's still such a like nasal floppy haired cipher, at least to me, that it's like, I can't necessarily invest in all this wrangling over him?
Yeah.
I mean, at least Chris, like, I don't know, scammed them and bolted from a casino and now is running a cafe in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
But Richard is like, I don't, are we supposed to think that he's a, like, I don't know, business Casanova? Are we supposed to think he's actually dangerous? I don't understand what the show wants us to think.
Right. I mean, it would be different if it was like, he's going to just move on to someone else as soon as there's a new designer. If the reason that he and Jane broke up wasn't because he was like, I love you. And she was like, same. And then he found out that wasn't true. Like, mm-hmm. he actually had a good reason to break up with her.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily the same thing that's going to happen with Joe. But at the same time, he is just slippery. So
yeah,
I guess I get it. But I agree with you. It's hard to care.
Yeah. And I don't think the writers exactly know what they're doing with him yet, but they're usually a little more subtle than this. But this mm-hmm. is not the only plot line in which this is a problem. Like, I feel like the show used to be a little better about, even if it's soapy and unrealistic on a plot level, letting the characters be believable about it.
Right.
On that level. And lately, like, Amanda is just like all over the place, but we will get to her.
It's true. And at this point, it's like they barely seem to remember stuff that happened in this same season.
Yeah.
Like, case in point, this next scene. So Alan's moving in at Matt's, or not this scene, but a later one, sorry. Alan's moving in at Matt's place. Matt interrupts the chat about what things should go where by asking for some pretty standard personal data. Clip four.
I need some information from you for the lease here. What's your bank?
Don't have one.
Oh, credit problems?
Don't need no stinking credit.
Okay. Ever been arrested?
Once, protest march. I chained myself to the main gate of a nuclear plant. Nuclear. And a lot of good times with that chain. You know, I remember once where...
Spare me. Listen.
I'm imagining, like, wow. The form having checkboxes for all the things he's saying verbatim.
Right.
What's your current place of employment?
I don't need no stinking wages.
Your last job?
Leisure wear salesman at Robinson's for the Christmas rush.
And your last place of residence?
Beverly Drive, north of Sunset. I can't remember the address exactly.
Oh, pretty ritzy zip code. How long were you there?
A couple years.
And you don't remember the address?
I have a bad head for numbers, okay?
Okay. Hey, I don't need no stinking address.
How about Red Flag Drive, population U, again?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out why Alan is being so evasive about all this. But if he were this broke and or off the grid, how did he afford several days in a hospital for a broken bone and invisible boo-boo on his head? A. B. Alan has an agent or manager, the ponytail guy that we saw in his mm-hmm. first scene, but not a bank account. It's 1996. Next, yeah. Have a better answer for the address question, because if you were living there for multiple years, were you not also still living there until, like, right before this?
And yeah.
Matt's spare me before Alan can start rhapsodizing about his firebrand protester days is so good.
Yeah.
Much no. like M. Night Shyamalan's Signs. I didn't know why I was singing that bum 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 uh-huh. bum 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 until I heard why. Oh no, he has an invisible boo boo. Oh no, he has an invisible boo boo. See, it's yeah. just like it was fated to happen, and I just didn't know why. Bum 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 bum.
Over to the hospital. Sydney bustles into Kimberly's office.
Where Dave is about to be.
Oh god. We now see that the dress that we liked is part of a suit. There's a matching jacket with a big white fur collar. Oh. You can see this in the visual aids, too, in cred. She is there to tell Kimberly in her ugly new hair, which is also in the visual aids, that...
Yeah, which she borrowed from Patrick Muldoon. Guys, uh-huh. she just has a big forehead. Go with it. It's fine.
Yeah. Anyway, she's there to tell Kimberly that Jane, Allison, and Joe all suspect her of doing what she did. She begs Kimberly to assure her that the pills won't get traced back to her, but instead Kimberly asks whether they talked about anyone else in the conversation, and Sydney says Richard. And Kimberly says the only way to win Hot Potato is to throw it to someone else. The solution to Sydney's problems in her purse. And in the very next scene, we're at the studio after dark. Fortunately for Sydney, the cleaner is there, and so the door was open, and she lets herself in to Richard's office and plants the pills in a Ziploc bag, like, in a side drawer. Easiest thing ever.
Why are these pills still? Why weren't they flushed down the magical drug toilet at the beach apartment? Like, this is incredible. I know it's a soap. Still. Mm-hmm. Annoying.
The next day, Joe flips through prints from a recent photo shoot of Jane and her new hair, and Richard, coming up behind Joe, distractedly says something bland about Jane not deserving to have had a stroke, which, like, bare minimum of empathy, but okay.
Mm, yeah.
He is faintly concerned when Joe tells him she went to see Jane and let her know that Jane had their support. Richard doesn't want to rub Jane's nose in their happiness, but regardless of Jane's condition, they should concentrate on their future, not their past. And for some reason, Joe thinks her future includes Jane, despite all evidence. And Richard says that's fine, but the company has to move on. He's scheduled interviews with new designers. Someone has to do Jane's job because the market isn't going to wait around for her recovery, he says. Not because he's forcing her out of the company. That was two episodes ago. Like, that's the reason you need a new designer. Just go through with the paperwork now. What's the difference, I guess?
Yeah. Also, good luck getting any of this business insured when your chief designers keep almost/dying.
Yeah. So Joe tries to get Richard to let her participate in the interviews. Why? But he can handle it on his own. And elsewhere, Sydney finds Jane mid-PT session to cast suspicion on Richard because he had motive and opportunity, and Richard might even have some evidence lying around. And so after Sydney's gotten rid of the therapist, she tries to grab Jane's arm and, like, do her own PT moves. She doesn't know. Like, she's just rotating her wrist until Jane's like, quit it! It's very funny. It's in the visual aids.
Yeah.
But let's hear that. Clip 5.
Joe could be next on his hit list.
Richard is hardly a serial killer.
Yeah, but he could be a serial stroker. I say we bust him before he strokes again.
That's phrasing. Very good writing. Sorry.
Phrasing. Love it.
Like, it works on so many levels. Strokes again. Brilliant. Sydney goes straight to a payphone in the hall to dial 911 and report evidence of attempted murder. And then at the complex, Kimberly comes by Matt and Alan's place with a covered dish, unlikely, welcoming him to the building. And he is so actory at her, but she pretends that she's not bothered in clip 6.
Oh, I'm afraid I can't let you leave. You're much too good an audience.
Oh, that's right. You're an actor.
Yes.
You must be quite a catch.
You make me sound like a trout.
No, Matt's the one who was almost filleted, especially after that whole thing.
What thing?
Just that that business with Paul.
Paul?
The unpleasantness.
So she tells Alan the whole story accurately, although does not fully spell out that Paul was killed by cops. And then Matt interrupts her tale, and Alan suddenly remembers he has an audition he has to get to and hustles out. And before she also leaves, Kimberly has two words for Matt. Couples therapy.
I mean, she's not wrong.
No. She never forgets. See if this fucking guy ever snatches a wig again. He won't.
Mm-hmm.
So then apparently Alan stays out all night, which, like, where he was possibly unhoused until days ago, and tries to sneak back in the next morning, but Matt was asleep on the couch waiting for him. And to Matt's question about where he was, Alan, possibly still drunk, claims it was a long audition. Then admits he was out walking, having second thoughts about Matt's rap sheet. And Matt is like, you were arrested too, as if his new QLAR protest is the same as a murder, which, like, we know it's a frame job, but still. Which is basically what Matt says, adding that Kimberly is the neighborhood maniac, though does not elaborate by telling Alan how, she tried to blow up the complex.
Yeah. Like, and I think you just tell him that and be like, I hope you didn't eat out of that covered dish, and B, I assume we're done talking about anything she said, because that should be the end of it, I feel.
Well, then Alan's question is, wait, why is she living here then? And Matt would have to be like, 10 and 10 and 10 and 10. No one knows. No one knows.
Economy of characters, characters, characters.
Yes, okay. But anyway, the conversation goes on. Clip 7.
Fine. Fine, but I still don't like the way you hid your little liaison dangereuse from me.
Nope.
Dangereuse?
Fine, while we're on the subject of hidden lies, suppose you fill me in on your mysterious past.
All right. In the spirit of honesty, I was the companion of a Beverly Hills banker.
You were a gigolo?
Well, it wasn't like that. But as it turned out, he wasn't exactly the love of my life either. But he did allow me to take acting classes and do small theater.
So sort of like a day job.
And then that's it. This scene is very weird.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that Matt is, you know, not shaming him about being a sex worker in the past.
No, but I love also that he's sort of scandalized that he's like, oh, you're a rent boy? Like, he doesn't sound not into it, so
yeah.
All right.
Gigolo.
Gigolo. When are we, Phyllis?
Also, give this poor actor another take to try to get into the right hemisphere of liaison dangereuse.
Liaison dangereuse. Is that a wrestler? I don't know what's happening.
Oh. So the next day, Joe's at the office when Richard comes out. I didn't notice this until I was doing the visual aids, but when in the long shot, when we see him coming towards Joe from down the hall, he doesn't have his show shoes on. He's in sneakers.
Really?
And not like fashion sneakers, which was like not a thing that people were wearing with suits at this time, but they're just like Reebok running shoes.
Amazing.
You can see this in visual aids, of course.
I kind of like him more now.
Yeah, but it would be like seeing one of the women in like Uggs, you know, where it's like, oops, are you going to show me head to toe? I better change my shoes. He did not. He is with a cute young brunette that he introduces as Stephanie Delgado, a prospective replacement for Jane. Clip 8.
You're the house photographer, right? I just love your work. Do you show anywhere?
Yes.
That's it. So Rich is
on
like,
Zillow.com. Because houses, never mind.
Right. Richard tells this broad to go wait for him and then enthuses to Joe that he's never seen designs so mature from someone with so little experience. Joe's dubious face at this is hilarious. In the visual aids, of course. She says without saying it that she's pretty sure Richard is just hiring on the basis of whom he wants to fuck, but he either pretends not to get her meaning or actually doesn't get it. And when Joe says she has a headache, he blandly tells her where the aspirin is in his office, and it happens to be in the drawer that also contains the Ziploc bag of pills. Done. Then we're at the cop shop in the 70s. In this B-roll. You can see in the visual aids that this is the first time I ever noticed the actual cops coming out of it, and their mustaches are pure 1977.
Love it.
Inside, Sydney and her leopard print coat, no complaints, are ushered over to Detective Klein. They already checked Richard out, and he's clean. And he goes on, angling for a spinoff. I quite honestly want to give him clip 9.
Honey, your sister took some pills at a party. Everybody takes pills. Myself, I'm on Xanax. My dog is on Xanax.
But there could be new evidence lying around. I don't know, in his office or somewhere.
What did you do, plant it? Sorry, bad joke. It's kind of a touchy subject around here lately. We try to defuse it with humor.
Oh, right.
Is yeah, that,
I mean,
that Tony from The Simpsons?
No.
Oh, God. That, I mean, that's amazing. Like, that guy making his own fun, the writers making their own fun.
Yeah.
I'm not totally on board with a lot of things in season 4, but when people are just like, fuck it, we have to shoot 5 episodes today. That guy freelanced.
Yeah.
Print it. Sure. Yep.
He was great. And I mean, that plus before he strokes again, I'm like, I'm not mad at this episode across the board, I have to say.
No.
But also, just reminding everyone, this is 1996. So when he says, that's a touchy subject around here in terms of planting evidence, that's an OJ reference for you right there. But he says the case isn't necessarily closed. If they get evidence or prints or something, anything's possible. And when he says prints, Sydney's like, That night, Jane is sleeping on the couch when Michael sneaks out of the bedroom, lies down next to her, and models sex-positive behavior for partners of people with disabilities. Just kidding. He is a creep. Clipped in.
You know, Jane, paraplegia should not be an impediment to sexual pleasure. Some senses may actually intensify. Not to mention that it's as wonderful to give physical joy as it is to receive it.
Smashes a vase on his head.
No!
Hey! Come on, Jane.
I can't take this anymore, Michael. Get away from me!
Shh, come on, you're just upset.
Yeah, you're damn right I'm upset! You're using me for sex, and all I used you for was to make Richard jealous.
You were using me?
Believe me, any affection I've shown for you has been a complete and utter ruse.
But don't you have any feelings for me at all?
Oh, yes, Michael, I loathe you. You disgust me!
You were having sex on a paralyzed woman?
I was not having sex on her. I was seducing her.
If she wants it, it's seduction. If she doesn't, it's rape.
Well, I thought she wanted it.
I know I got what I deserve, but enough is enough.
You know, so I've just been your dupe all along.
No, you were Kimberly's dupe for a while, too. Then Peter's on and off.
How could you think I still cared for you, Michael? You're such an idiot.
You can't take this anymore. I can't take this anymore. You two fruitcakes are driving me nuts.
Oh, character defects like yours are born, Michael, not made.
Or in your particular case, hatched.
Yeah, well, you two obviously fell into the same genetic pool and stayed under too long. I hope you're happy together, because I'm moving out.
Love it.
Yep, no notes.
The vase smash is gorgeous. That is also in the middle.
It is a massive vase. Like, why is that even there? That is the only reason. Perfect.
So then, Michael's sleeping in the on-call room when Kimberly enters and starts disrobing, reminiscing about how hot they used to get in there. Her bra, which is also in the visual aids, because I'm a perv, should be in the Smithsonian, what it does. Wow. This is like the golden age of the Wonder Bra, and it is working overtime.
Yes. I also was struck in wonderment.
Anyway, this is what she says, clip 11.
Oh, we'd run back here from our patients and our moans of pleasure would mingle with their moans of pain. It's almost deja vu, isn't it? I'm here. You're here. But there was always something dark between us, wasn't there, Michael? I can never go to that place again. It won't work anymore. It would be bad for us both.
Kind of like reaches for her as she gets up off the bed, and it's a nice touch, good detail from him. But watching it again, was this a dream? Because I couldn't tell.
I couldn't either.
Okay.
I mean, I think given in the next what we see in the next episode, probably we're supposed to think it's a dream.
I feel like they would have made it more obvious. Yeah,
she could also be just like, that's what they found for Marcia Cross to do, and I am here for it.
Sure. So later, Joe comes into the office at Shooter's to see how Jake is. He is cold and curt, but she blows past that to show him the pills that she took from Richard's office instead of asking a doctor she knows, a medical student who's one of her best friends, Peter, who's at the complex all the time, whatever.
Call the cops.
Sure.
Come on, guys.
She explains what she thinks they are and where they're from, and he will support her whatever she decides, but she's going to have to do it herself. And she departs sadly because they're not getting back together yet or ever. Not sure. Then it's time for the A plot. Brooke's dramatic gesture has the desired effect. We rejoin this plotline as the EMTs arrive, giving us a rare POV through the gates shot. When it happened, I was like, oh, damn, this isn't usually where we are. See that in visual aids.
Yeah. And I mean, but then we spend like 30 seconds on them rolling into the courtyard, which like, yes. Guys, just run it short, sell another mm-hmm. ad. I don't know.
Yeah. So Billy deposits Brooke on the gurney with Allison standing by, and soon Amanda and Peter also appear, the latter being all, I'm a doctor! And then Allison comes out again and hands a blood-speckled Billy the note that he ignored, but he doesn't read it yet and says he'll go with Brooke to the hospital. But she wakes up and bleats at them to keep Billy away from her, which does not look good for our boy when that happens under the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And after the credits, Brooke is bandaged up in a hospital bed as Billy walks in, not having changed his bloody shirt before getting into a car and driving over there. Creep. He's sorry, but she tells him to leave. He wants to stay with her, but she says he doesn't care about her. And given their last exchange, which we saw, you can understand why she would get that impression. And things don't get better from there, including, as usual, Andrew Shue's attempts to arrange his face in an expression appropriate oh my for the God. Scene. Gift, of course, and they have this exchange, clip 12.
I love you.
You deserted me.
I can understand how you might have felt that I wasn't there for you before, but I want you to know that I am here for you now.
I lost my father. I lost the baby that I thought I had. I thought I was losing you.
I am gonna stand by you.
Better to watch me bleed?
Is this what you wanted? Well, you got it, Casanova! This is no paranoid delusion! This is real! This is real life for what it's worth!
It's worth a lot if you value it.
Promise me one thing. Promise me that you won't leave me.
Promise. Promise you will not go through this alone.
What do you want? Make up your mind. I mean, the list of the reasons that she would have to try to die by suicide is like legit. Mm-hmm. And I also don't think that they've established whether this is just a dramatic gesture or if she meant it.
Yeah, I don't think they have either. And certainly, you know, I'm not sure it's established that Kristen Davis is actually a good actor who could summon those tears or is actually sobbing in frustration because her scene partner sounded like he was about to burst out laughing.
Yeah.
During the scene in which this, you know, apparently disordered personality has just tried to take her own life and is begging him not to leave, like, this is not anything he should be anywhere near. Go back to the wacky driving a cab stuff, because he can maybe handle that, but this is, like, this water is way too deep.
Yes.
For him.
But to your point with the crying, it's more dry cries. There are no tears to be seen.
Yeah.
Give people, again, give them one more take. Like, surely you have time for one. No? Okay. After some pretty endearing banter regarding his having just walked into Amanda's office unannounced, Bobby tells Amanda about Peter punching him at the end of the last episode, and he asks whether she told Peter about their Palm Springs flirtation, and Amanda spins that she now thinks of it as just a goodbye kiss. Also, of course, she did not tell Peter, who then phones at that very moment to comment that they haven't really talked about Palm Springs, except we totally just saw Amanda and Peter run out to the courtyard when the ambulance came for Brooke. Where we are now is two scenes, probably a day after that. Mm-hmm. So according to this timeline, Peter punched Bobby, went over to Amanda's to hang out and fuck or whatever, and never said anything or decide that instead of going over to her place and acting like nothing was wrong, he could just go to his own home and screen her calls. Like, was it that important?
Get there separately? I don't.
Yeah.
Like, once again, it's supposed to be in the show's timeline. Like, that was New Year's Eve.
Right.
It's been at least a week. I don't know. This is dumb.
Anyway, He wants to set things straight with Amanda, but she's in a meeting, so can they discuss it later? Sure, but Peter wants to take Amanda and Bobby out for dinner the next night. And does Amanda know where Bobby is right now? She lies that she doesn't, at which Bobby faintly smirks. And Michael was apparently eavesdropping on all this, unbeknownst to Peter or us, and weighs in. Clip 13.
You know, you're an idiot if you think getting chummy with Bobby is the way to Amanda's heart.
The way to Amanda's heart is littered with casualties, Michael. And I don't intend to be one of them.
Peter, the guy is obviously trying to score.
Well, then he needs to know the ground rules. And who he's playing against.
Okay.
Also on the timeline, I think this is the next day, because remember, Billy came back from Palm Springs with Allison, and he walked in on Brooke.
Right.
So okay. This is that night.
Okay.
So it's probably New Year's Day. This is the day after.
Okay.
But still, Peter punched Bobby and then went over to Amanda's and acted so normal she didn't notice anything was wrong.
Yeah. I will also note that Bobby, she asks, like, oh, are you okay? When she finds out that Peter decked him, he's like, yeah, I'm fine. And there's not a mark on him, which,
of course,
believable. And it's like, my notes are like, of course you're fine. This is like when pitchers punch a fan after a bad outing. Like, the fan doesn't care.
Yeah.
It's a fan. He's a building. It's fine.
So that night, Allison finds Billy still in the bloody shirt the next day. Like, did he fucking sleep in it? He's scrubbing the blood off the bathroom floor.
Ineffectually. Like,
very badly.
This is for visual effect, but it's like he slopped some water onto it and then it's just like stirring it while making a face of what genre? Who can say?
I mean, part of this is that the props are not helping him, but I also know the Shoes grew up with money and it's clear Andrew Shoe has never washed a floor.
No.
Allison decides this is a good time to talk about their relationship with each other and how they've been getting close again lately. No. Only in reaction to Brooke. Anyway, that's how this goes. Clip 14.
I guess partly it's because you fill a void since Haley's gone. But it's more than that. I've been realizing my life is full of turns. Jobs and lovers. Strange journeys. But you're my soulmate. I think you're here with me here. I want you to know I always will. Billy.
Get out. Favor, because this is my life now, so just stay away.
Billy, I'm here.
Then get out while you can, and don't come back. Now!
And Allison is a cat on the counter and job like, what are you doing, Andrew?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do? Why is this happening to all of us? Help.
The best part of that is that you can hear in the audio that he's just like scuffing this brush around. Like, it's not any clean up blood.
No.
Get some Clorox spray, some paper fucking towels. Get to work.
Fucking dying for Faye Dunaway to barge in there with a face full of cold cream and a thing of powder.
Yeah.
Nope.
The next day, finally in a new shirt, Billy strolls into Amanda's office and basically orders her to give Brooke her old job back. Amanda tells him not to bully her, but Billy persists. Brooke left her job due to certain circumstances which have since changed. But this is not Amanda's first crybaby rodeo, clip 15.
She quit. She made her own bed. Now she's got to sleep in it.
Can't you show a little charity for once in your life?
I'd rather show good sense. Brooke is waging emotional blackmail. If you play it wrong, it's going to blow up in your face, just like her big lie about the miscarriage.
Well, I guarantee you she cut her wrists, okay?
That, my dear lady, is the truth.
Okay, here's my truth. Fear is what made me stay with Jack all those years, and I will not help you into that same prison now.
Then here's mine. I'm bringing Brooke back to work. If you try and stand in my way, then I'm going to quit.
Oh, no? Don't quit?
Seriously, don't threaten us with a good time.
Also, this is not how jobs work. You don't get to just go in and yell at your boss to give your wife her job back. Like,
yeah.
No.
No.
Also, my dear lady, what?
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, Cagney shit happening. We'll talk about it later. But, yeah, my dear lady. Someone calls someone chum later. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't actually hate it. This episode is, like, very weird, and I feel like it's a lot of setup stuff. So whatever little things people are doing in the margins, even if they don't work, I'm like, at least it's interesting.
Yeah. So then we're watching Billy walk Brooke back into the apartment. It is January, but of course she is in a short-sleeved mock turtleneck, the better to show off the bandages. And she is also mopily despondent about his claim that all their neighbors are going to be glad to see her. Amanda wants her back at the office. Joe sent a book about visualizing your dreams. Thanks, Joe.
Joe, Jesus.
After a moment, she notices that Brooke is not with him and finds a knife out on the kitchen counter, and then Brooke herself crouching behind the bathroom door. And she tells him not to worry. She's not going to kill herself today, and looks smug. So maybe Amanda was right, Billy.
Mm.
Over dinner, Peter toasts to true love with, as Amanda points out, an empty glass. Peter asks what Amanda and Bobby's first close encounter, was like. Amanda tries to dodge, but Peter was really just waiting to segue to announcing that he knows how their last close encounter went. Clip 16.
I saw your little Palm Springs reunion kiss.
Look, Peter, that was just a holiday thing.
It was a history lesson, chum. Tonight,
chum.
We're into current events.
Take it easy, Peter. It was my fault.
Oh, no, I think that you and Commander Smooth each share those honors.
Listen, there's no reason to...
The reason is I care about this woman, Sailor Boy. We had something solid happening finally, and you walk right back in like, honey, I'm home. Well, I'm not about to slip out the back.
I never suggested you should.
Well, I'm suggesting that you should. I'm suggesting that Amanda is mine. You've been here at our pleasure, and we are no longer pleased.
Sink me!
Property. Stop being so slick for once.
For once? I struggle for you. That's not slick. I have feelings for you. You think Palm Springs didn't hurt? I protect you from Bobby and his pals. I bend over backwards to hold things together for you. Hell, if it hadn't been for me bailing your ass out of that Jack Parisi mess, you'd be doing hard time in a three bunk cell by now.
That whole monologue was delightful. I mean, it's completely out of character. Not the motivation, but the actual word choices. But the best is when he's like, you move right back in. Hi, honey, I'm home. And he does, you can kind of hear it in the audio. He does a like snap back and forth, which is in the visual aids. Peter, what are you doing? I mean,
yeah.
I love it. But
there's
what?
A whole lot of talk about the back door and John Enos, who like always looks a little bit smirky, but they cut back to him a couple of times and he's like, this fucking guy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's funny.
Yes. It's
very entertaining.
Good. Very good. Commander Smooth also. The next night, Jake finds Billy beating up the pinball machine at Shooters and pulls him away to get him a drink on the house, of course. Mm-hmm. Billy has complaints, but Lone Wolf Jake has thoughts. Clip 17.
Brooke's at the therapist. I've got a few hours to kill.
So just keep obsessing. Should have done this, should have said that. It's crazy.
World's worst words, I should have.
Yeah, but the thing is, if I keep getting it wrong, then she's going to try and hurt herself again just to hurt me.
That's her choice.
On my watch.
Got to take care of yourself, man. Can't be good to anybody if you're not good to yourself.
Are you good to yourself, Jake?
Nobody else is going to be.
So, anything happening with you and Joe these days?
Yeah, she's got her life and I got mine.
You seem wildly thrilled about the situation.
Well, I am, okay? This is the good life. Any more questions?
Yeah, are you lying to me or are you lying to yourself?
I'm telling you. I don't need some barstool psychologist to crawl inside my head looking for trash.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's season four. Jake's whole, like, you know, I'll just be alone and not let the ladies hurt me. Like, asked and answered, no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not going to take his shirt off, extra no one, extra doesn't care.
Seriously. But sorry. Also, Billy, maybe you should also look into therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
Not that it seems to be doing Brooke much good, speaking of whom. Back home, she comes out in yet another virginal negligee and her bandages to interrupt Billy while he works. And after extracting a compliment from him, she starts pawing at him. Clip 18.
God.
Make love to me, Billy.
I really have to finish going over these papers for a morning meeting.
Get up early and do it.
No.
I need you to want me, just like before.
I do want you.
What's the matter? I don't excite you anymore?
What kind of question is that? Come on, honey.
I want to kiss you everywhere.
Okay, just wait until I...
What? You want to kiss me everywhere? Come on.
Nope.
This is...
No, thank you.
I mean, it's supposed to be disturbing, and it is. I hate it so much.
And it's like, why is she pawing that mannequin? It's really upsetting.
Also, you get up early and do it. That's never the answer. Finish it tonight. You are not going to want to wake up in the morning, at least. Mm. That's me. Night person versus morning person arguments, I suppose. Then it's the next day. Billy is walking Brooke back into D&D, trying to be positive about everything while she snaps at him not to patronize her. And Amanda appears to talk to Billy without even acknowledging Brooke, who takes off to her office, which I guess she thinks they kept empty for the weeks since she quit. But that is not the case. Allison is working in there now, although Brooke's name is still stenciled on the door. And Allison tries to remain calm and be an adult about the situation, but Brooke cannot do that in her life. And we hear how that goes. Clip 19.
Brooke, welcome back. We weren't sure when you'd be coming in.
So you thought you'd steal my clients in the meantime?
Amanda asked me to stay on top of your accounts until you...
Get out of my chair. Get out of my files. Get out of my marriage.
Brooke.
Get out of my life.
You quit, bitch.
Yes. So nice to have you back.
You stole your clients from yourself.
Also,
shut up.
I'm so glad you mentioned clients because you're going to have this bitch work with clients. This is a face you want to put in front of people you're trying to get to give you money. She is not in any fit state. Billy.
She would be excellent as a model for a shampoo.
Yes.
Her hair looks great.
It does. So Allison does decide not to try to engage with this. Wise. Stomping past Amanda with Billy trying to define parameters for Brooke's employment. Like, this is all really not how work works. But then Brooke is calling to Billy that she needs him, and he goes, yikes. Later, Bobby shows up at Amanda's place complaining that he waited for her at Shooters for an hour. She is unapologetic and also doesn't want to let him in. He says that what happened the other night was awful and it will not happen again. Bobby tells her to choose Peter. He's a good man and he loves her. She thinks she'll keep to herself for a while. He knows the feeling, and then he takes her hand. Clip 20.
So now, my famous last words. I love you. Plain and fancy. You're in my heart. There's no way out. If you ever need anything, I'm here.
And then
she scales the building.
Well, this is the best part. So she stands aside to let him in, and someone on the set figured out, okay, get John Enos to sit on the arm of the couch so that their heads are like in the frame or, you know, in the same area code. It's very good. And undressing ensues. And we assume they fuck. And that's the end.
Mm-hmm.
Let us name the episode MVP. I'm going to say wardrobe because Sydney did not look too crazy this week. It was on the right side of styling vintage for me.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to say Jane.
Yeah. The Voss smash?
Yeah. Or actually, you know what? The Andrew sisters, because Jane smashes a huge terracotta contraption over Michael's head. And then Sydney's like, and here's some words about consent. Thank you.
Yeah. Honorable mention to Detective Klein. Please come back. We
oh,
love
God,
you.
Oh, God. Yeah. True. True.
Least valuable player. Michael. Yuck.
Yeah. Wilshire Memorial. Brooke needs to stay in longer. I don't care what her insurance situation is. She's a danger to herself.
Yep. Agreed.
Speaking of danger to ourselves, Simon again with this.
Wait, hang on.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Challenge accepted. Next time on Again With This, the Brilli marriage continues forcing us to watch Andrew Shue's bad, quote, acting, quote, choices, and only Sydney's wardrobe choices make less sense than her scheming choices. If you choose to check out our visual aids, goddammit, pack a couple cucumber slices for your eyes. You'll find those, the visual aids, not the cukes, for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you could find links to our very special 90210 book. I refuse to submit. Or you could follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you
more of this.
And who doesn't want that? I'm sort of like a day job Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is gossip bomber Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is out of fucks to give, so don't ask. Talk to you next time.
I'd like a new life. Who wouldn't?
Chef's kiss.